2A. Now, in this second period of going back to shore, which was 1983 right through to the end of 2006, in the early 80s, did you feel that there was a change in climate as a woman teacher?
Yes, I think there was, and I found when I went back that I was more drawn to the senior school music department than the prep, as you can imagine, because it was just me, and I was very involved, became very involved in all the senior music students, because they'd come from the prep, and then also some of my previous students. So I actually did a lot of work in the senior school as well. So I did a great deal of the accompanying for everything that was on, didn't matter what it was, and was, you know, helped out with everything really. And so it was lovely being in the prep, I actually found that I had great difficulty knowing what department I was in, and I wore two hats. Yeah. So I was the prep, but I was also the music. And so I found that the full-time job very quickly became full and a half-time, because I just did everything in the senior school, whatever was on, sang in the choir, played for the choir, accompanied all the boys, did exams, did a Stedfords, did the musicals, did everything, as well as prep music. So it got to the stage where they had music awards, which is an opportunity for all instrumentalists to play solo and to be heard by an adjudicator and then at a concert put on. And for several years, I said to Stephen Bowers, could I take a couple of weeks off from the prep and prepare this and do it? And so I did that, and I got a relief teacher in. So I was pulled very hard. I many times wondered if I might end up in the senior school music department. I missed the senior work greatly, and tended to keep in touch with and work with students, you know, whatever. I still consider myself part of the senior school music department, basically. And so that was interesting, and it was also hair-raising stuff, I suppose, because at home my children were getting older, and my husband sang in the Philharmonia Motet Choir for 25 years. And so musically we were both doing. I also, of course, had to, as part of my job, I played chapel on Sundays, and then Robert Fox and I shared that. So I was doing a pretty much a six-day week.
This was chapel at Shore?
Oh, yes. Yes, well, I couldn't continue doing St. Stephen's Macquarie Street as well, because I couldn't play Sunday chapel at Shaw and at St. Stephen's Macquarie Street. I couldn't do it. So I gave up St. Stephen's. So you just can't do everything. Yeah. So it's always been a bit of a pull, you know, which way you're going and wanting to do the best, I suppose, in all these different worlds that the music offers.
Yes, as a music teacher, not dealing with those developed students must have been very frustrating at first.
Well, I think that's probably why. Well, it all developed because one boy asked me if I'd play for an exam, and he was a senior boy, and so he used to come over to the prep and we'd prepare it and so on, and it just, one thing led to another, and you know, my boys would go into year seven and I'd just follow them through, I suppose, and it never occurred to me not to, because I think all music departments are short-staffed. There's always something to do. There's so much to do, and so I was very fortunate to be able to do that, and for boys to come back and when they got married or whatever, and to see them again and they'd ask for, you know, ask me to play, or they'd ask for the choir, for the little prep choir or whatever. Just wonderful relationships. Shaw's relationships, it's very strong. The relationships are very strong, both with the boys and with the staff members who, you know, you grow to love them very much.
Mm. During this time, had the whole traditional attitude of the school that you described earlier changed by the 1980s? Had Mr. Grant brought in a different feeling?
I believe so. I think Jaika used two words, and he was absolutely not a democracy, he was a dictatorship, and that's how he ran things. So any request that you wrote, the reply was always either yes or no, no grey area, and that's how he ran his school. So with Bob Grant, a totally different era, and a different age, and a different outlook, so inevitably different. And I think Bob didn't use that regimentation, and so therefore there was more creative flow allowed. How can I put it? In every department. I can't speak for others. Mm. It didn't matter if the hymns weren't quite up to scratch. You weren't asked to practice them. You know, there was more a liberalisation, and I think more everything a positive. I think from a negative discipline, I've seen in my time a complete change round to a total positive one, and that came about more recently, and of course with Ken Gilmore, and then in the prep, very surprisingly, the senior school took notice of somebody in the prep school. And that person was a person called Anne Clark, who came from Scotland.
Yeah.
And she was appointed onto the discipline and committee. And she instigated in the prep school and also complimented what was happening in the senior school with positive discipline. And that has been a complete turnaround.
Was she a teacher?
My word, she was. She's a more recent teacher in Stephen Bauer's time, and she was like a deputy to him, if you like. Yes, before the infant school was at Northbridge.
Mm. Ah, and I see.
She
because
was
the prep originally was the only young age institution, and that has been expanded.
That's right. And of course the prep school when Jaika was there was run like the senior school.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, even the names of the classes, you'll be teaching SB1, SB2, Remove A, Remove B. And you went, what? What are you talking about? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Or even the terminology was quite foreign.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you knew about the public school system in England. Yes, so there's been a complete turnaround. Yes. Mm.
Now, with the prep itself, in 83, that was Bob Peterson's
last year as head,
and then David Anderson came.
That's right.
Just for a comparatively short
just
period.
Just a short time, yes. And then he was appointed back into the senior school.
Ah, I see. Mm. And then Stephen Bowers has been there
ever since. Stephen was in teaching fourth class.
Mm-hmm.
When he was first appointed to Shaw, and he taught my son Philip in fourth class.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's been a long association with him.
What was it like having a son at the school while you were teaching? Did that have any difficulties?
I think it had difficulties for Philip. I think it had a lot of difficulties for him. It was not easy for him when he was in my classes, and vice versa, of course. Yes, it's a price to pay. It certainly is. And the fact that I'm a female made it even more apparent, I guess, and the fact that he was a redhead with glasses made it even harder for him. Yes. And my other son, our other son, went to St. Andrews in the city. So, yes, we even thought about swapping them and letting them have a different opportunity, but we didn't in the end, and so Philip went right through to Year 12.
And did he get on better when he wasn't associated as much with you?
Oh, in the senior school? Oh, I'm sure, yes, I'm sure, yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yes, it's always, I think it's, everyone is very aware of that. And there are many brothers and many staff members, children who go through, and we're all very aware of that. And I think we're all very caring about looking after each other's, you know, if I was teaching the son of a staff member, you just have that extra awareness and always an interest and ask how things are going. There was a tremendous amount of caring in the prep school, certainly last in the last era, I'll put it that way. Yes.
Well, it's been a long era, this last one.
Yes.
So obviously a satisfactory era.
Well, it's been lovely. It's just been, with many, many friendships and many, many wonderful developments. It's been so lovely to see, especially when the prep was able to expand and then to have a new building and to have a new art book and all of those things. And then, of course, I suppose one has to say that it's very nice to see that we suddenly have a very unbalanced staff and we have only a few men teachers in the prep and the infant school and all these women who are all these wonderful young girls who are so talented and who are so capable. And that's what's normal. The fact that it's like a family. Whereas before, when you came to shore, everything was male. I mean, you know, you'd have to inquire about where the toilets were and all sort of things. It wouldn't automatically, they'd think, oh, good, we need to provide for the women. It just, all these things were, the thinking was male. And so when you were there, you had to think like a male. And probably I should say that when I first started there, innuendo, I didn't know about it because I was so naive. And it doesn't matter what you say in a male classroom, they can read something into it. And so, that, you see, even that awareness is something that now all women are aware of it. And so it's spoken about and you know. And you know not to say something that way. You'll say it another way so that you don't get yourself into a situation where you are embarrassed or you embarrass your class or you've lost them. That was the lesson, you know. So those are the things, you know, where you become, it's more normal, as it were, in that it's more like a family, I think. And I think that's really important. I think it's a balance. I think now there's a balance. And I think that's it's very, very good. I think the men's value and the women's value is now, the value of men and women are now equally appreciated, understood, recognised. Mm. And I think it's now equal opportunity, isn't it?
It's interesting to ask if you think this balance rubs off on the senior boys' life in general and their relationships as they go through teenagehood. It would be very hard to estimate that.
It would be
hard. Have you got any opinion?
I don't know how you'd estimate that. I think you'd be interviewing the boys when they're all boys, and then you'll find out. They don't know any different now. They've not experienced being in an all-boys school with an all-male staff. And they haven't experienced being in that era. None of us can experience that, can they?
No.
None of us can appreciate what it would have been like, even, you know, 100 years ago, what it would have been like. But I think so. I think that everybody makes a contribution, and I think the staff value each other, and they admire each other, and I think that's very important, and they respect each other, and so that now when you walk into common room, there is certainly no feeling of difference or non-acceptance, and I feel really very, very happy about that, and I really feel that it's been a fantastic thing that women have been accepted at Shaw, in the senior school particularly. In the prep and the infant school, it never existed except in my very early time. When women had started, like Hilary said, women were there. And so that was, a start had been made. So, and the matrons, because the matrons, there was a boarding school, Purvis House was boarding, and so the matrons was there, so the caring was there, a little bit of caring was there. Now the prep boys who come in as boarders, they're in the senior school boarding houses. They go over to schoolhouse. So it's...
And does that work all right, do you think?
Yes. Yes, I think so. Seems to.
Was that because of numbers?
Yes. Yes, they couldn't. They couldn't continue to have enough, you know, prep boarders to have a staff member, and then staff members for the weekend and all those things. I believe so. Yes, they're very little to be boarding.
Yes, they are, but there are circumstances that's sometimes.
Exactly, that's right. Yes.
Now, you were talking about the positive discipline that came in. Was this a policy that Mr. Grant initiated when he became headmaster?
Whenever the cane was abolished, I think that was when it was the point of turning round.
A statewide movement, wasn't it?
That's right.
And what were the measures of positive discipline?
Well, I think staff were asked to do staff development days with people. Trying to think of the man who had written all these books on boys. Very tall man, and I, of course, when I want to remember, I can't. There was more awareness and talk about boys' issues, and why a boy might get a white card, instead of just dealing with the behaviour, finding out why.
Why?
And, of course, I was in the prep when all, you know, really, when the turnaround came. And so, in the prep school, certainly, and always focused on any positive that a child had, not on what the obvious negative was. And it made a colossal difference. At staff meetings, people that had problems with children, or that there was a problem that they'd lost a parent, they'd had an accident, the child was behaving badly, what was the cause? Well, now it was discussed, and people became aware that that person's grandfather had died, that person's dog had been killed, that person... was facing surgery, or whatever it was, or why couldn't this child, why couldn't he behave in class, you know, he had an eating disorder or he was hyperactive or whatever it was, but that there was a reason, and that instead of the focus being on a negative outcome, that a more positive, all of us, or everyone was to, you know, to see more positively, but it was knowledge that you knew about it, I think. You know, it's very difficult when the senior school, for a boy's day in a senior school, he might have 6 different teachers he deals with, and then he's got sport, and then he's got the person on playground duty. So he might have even up to 10 staff that he might cross, that he might get reprimanded by. And that was talked about. A child who was given a write card because he didn't have his assignments in, then they asked how many assignments he had. The staff didn't know who'd given assignments when. So the boy might have 8 assignments due on a day.
So there was much more cross-staff consultation.
Discussion, consultation, and all that sort of thing. Communication. And I mean, some things that happened in the prep school which I thought were just absolutely wonderful. I mean, pastoral care for me is one of the great strengths of Shaw. And when John Carrero was appointed in the prep school, his caring of the boys, I think I've never seen anybody anywhere near him actually, for his caring of the boys. And
who was he? What was his position?
He's the deputy master in the senior school, in the prep school with Stephen Bowles. And he was appointed after Anne Clark. And his pastoral care, he set up a positive and negative discipline, if you like, whereby the boys, if there was a misdemeanour and it had to be dealt with, then at lunchtime the boy would just bring his work that had to be set, and a staff member would supervise the boys, and it was done in 20 minutes and was finished. And the boys were always rewarded. Pink cards in the prep school were just every child. Always every child was given a pink card within a couple of weeks, so that no child would go through a term without getting a pink card. Records were kept, all of that sort of thing. Encouragement for anything that they had achieved, didn't matter what it was. And not winning at all costs. And that's been a big lesson. That's been a big lesson for sure, I think.
So less competitiveness.
Yes, I think so. And more adulation to the children that excel and the children that try. So that the child that runs the long distance race and comes in a mile behind everybody else gets the biggest ovation. Very, very interesting and really fantastic role models being offered, I think, because I think now we find ourselves out of step with society, where you see on television some terrible stuff with in competitive sport, and you hear some terrible parent behaviour on sidelines and all these things. So it's interesting. And I think now, certainly in the prep school, the level of parenting by the staff and the pastoral care of the staff is huge, is immense. And the boys are extremely lucky with this wonderful caring, absolutely extraordinary caring. And when we've lost boys or lost parents, it's been an absolute unifying experience for the whole school. It's like this invisible thread, and every single person becomes part of this very strong core and very, 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 very wonderful, and something that's not written down, that's not said. But if you meet anybody from Shore, and I recently met a man in Lowcare where my mother is, and he's in a wheelchair with no legs. He said, he's a Shore boy. We immediately got this wonderful bridge. And we've got all this in common, and what, he's in his 90s. It's extraordinary. Shore's the wonderful things about Shore. It's just... it's something I think that the old boys and that I've met who are, you know, they go and say, well, who were you at school with and who was there and what did you do? And it doesn't matter what it is. You're able to talk about all these wonderful things. And it's something that I think a state school probably just doesn't have with the same strength and bonding. If there's a real bonding, I guess that may be not for everybody, but I find it so. And I find that I've been so fortunate and so enveloped with a warmness, I guess. How can you put it? All engrossing. My life's so enriched by Shore, after experiencing being a staff member and then a parent. And the time seems to be so long ago when I started, and you never think that you're ever going to get to the end of it. You think, these people have been there for so long, and then you look at when you're at the other end and you look at all these wonderful people that you're teaching with who are younger than your children, and you think, these wonderful people. I've found it to be just an extraordinary experience, and very fortunate to be. And I think the reason that I was there was because I had organ playing, not because of any teaching. And I was very fortunate to be there at the right time, place at the right time, I guess. Maybe no one else applied for the job. So, yes, it's been wonderful for me.
Very, very interesting that the sense of tradition that when you first went, only in the 70s, just about shut you out, literally, of the common room, and shut you out of the mentality of a boys' school, has turned around so much in a comparatively short time, even though
And it's been through... Yes, many things. And so musically, I've had some wonderful boys and therefore wonderful parents. And through the music, I've been able to have this wonderful feeling where I think I can get very close to boys, whereas before I became close to my boys from Balgala because I didn't go to common room. I spent recess and lunchtime with them. They had nothing in common with the other boys because they come from another school. And so the musicians actually ended up by having a little core. And then I had people like Graham LeWarn, who of course did all the musicals because of his drama, and some staff members who were wonderful, who were all friends, Georgina and Stan Gillespie and Bill Foulkes and... Fred Ross, all people who had, they were all friends, and they included Martin and I. And one of the most wonderful things was that Martin was included, and probably included as a staff member. As Dick Hart will say to you, he carries the flowers behind Georgina. Well, you can imagine, Martin was integral to me staying there. Really.
Well, it sounds as though he encouraged you through those gates in the very beginning.
Oh, yes. He had to push me. He had to push me, and every year he had to push me. But anyway, once I got there and got going again, it was okay. I was, I think, hypersensitive, and I found it extremely difficult. Bit of an A-type personality, and I found it quite hard to, for many reasons, I guess. But anyway, it has turned around, and it's wonderful, I think, to see. And I've also experienced the infant school, and I taught third class, had to go over to the other school and teach, and I taught kindergarten when it was first instigated with the 15 boys, and that was absolutely terrifying because I'd never taught kindergarten. I didn't know any of their songs, I knew nothing about them, and we had nothing in common. Anyway, I survived that, and I think they did, and then when they were in third class, they were my boys, and it was wonderful. Yeah. So that's been a real joy to see. And then to see some of the musicians who have passed through my path, Nicholas Bentivoglio, Scott Mazers, boys that I had from fifth class, Lucas Opetush, I've had from third class, and he's now at the Gressen Institute in Russia. And people with the most amazing musicians who are all going to be on the world stage, and you've just been there, and it's just so wonderful to think that you've they're lifetime friends, and it's very special. I think any teacher will tell you that. But of course, for me, it's been the music, and those boys, when they came in third class, they were always on my level, and they were always musicians. I never looked at them as an eight-year-old, or whatever it was. I never looked at them as musicians, and so for me, that's very special to have children who are obviously musicians, who are obviously, it doesn't matter what their age are, they have all the gifts and all the talents, and all you have to do is give them the tools. Well, I didn't give them any tools because they were extraordinary, and they learnt outside, and they were wonderful. Very interesting. Yeah. One boy I must mention is Harry Sutherland, and he was the most gifted boy, who's now in year 9, and he is a jazz musician, and he has, I think he was in fifth class, and I took him over to the senior school and I asked Peter Dorish if there was a band or something he could play with some year 7 boys or something. And I think Harry played with one group, a little group, year 8, for a couple of weeks, and then he suddenly was the pianist in the senior stage band. And this remarkable boy is just going to have a wonderful musical career if he wanted to, but I think he'll be a medico. And he's been coached now by James Morrison, and has played with James Morrison and Judy Bailey, and I often see him up at the New York Cafe, because he has a group of a small trio that he plays with, and these students are all much older than him, they're all studying at the conservatorium, and I see him often on Thursday evenings when I do running, and I run past, and then I go and sit and listen to him play at the cafe and meet his parents, and it's just quite wonderful to have students that are, you know, at shore who are not necessarily rowing or rugby or whatever they are, but a lot of them do that as well, but who are musicians. And I'm thrilled to think that Shaw now has got a fantastic facility for the music department to really flourish and to really grow.
To whom do you attribute that, really?
Well, I think the fact that they were able to build the auditorium and the music centre, then it puts music's there. It gives it's up there with other subjects. It's now a recognised subject, and that there is a need. Boys have a need for this. Boys have a need for dressing up and expressing themselves. And it is so important that they can do drama, they can do music. There's an ochre image in Australia that is often projected that it's not manly, it's feminine. Mm. And this ochre image is, I think, society has it. You know, I can remember parents coming and say, my son's not going to play the violin, and I say, well, I'm sorry, he will be, and maybe you will as well.
Yeah.
It's just not having a closed mind. And so whatever someone wants to try, they should be able to try. We have a dance program that started before I was appointed in the prep school. Edith Peluso was appointed by Robert Fox, and she coached the gymnastic team in the Commonwealth Games. And she did a lot of dance work in the prep school. It was called movement then. Now every class in the prep and infant school has dance. There's an elective dance group in the prep school that has been for a long time. There is always a waiting list to get into it.
Really?
Absolutely. And that has fed over into the senior school, so that the boys, a lot of prep boys, go into the musicals. They can all dance, they can all move, and it opens something for them. And two boys that I come to mind, one boy, Jack Burtonshaw, he learnt from the man that Grant Davies, who taught dance, and more recently at school, in this man's private studio, and he's now doing ballet through the Melbourne Ballet School. And another boy who's also learnt with Grant, who's done the popular dancing, he is one of the four boys who will be a lead in Billy Elliot. And that's Nick Twinney. And so it's wonderful to see these boys all have the ability, but do they have the opportunity? And Shaw now is able to offer so much opportunity. And it's one thing to say, aren't they talented? But it's another to say, yes, but we give them the opportunity and the springboard. And I find it so remarkably personally rewarding to think that Shaw offers that, and it makes me really, have to say, really proud of Shaw.
It's a combined effort, really, if you were saying that the physical space to perform is a very important element of this opportunity.
That's right.
Then it's the people who raise the money as well as the people who provide the philosophic framework.
That's right.
That are equally important.
Indeed. And I admire them so much for their foresight. Robert Fox, of course, did a huge amount of research.
Now, what was his position?
Well, he was performing arts master, and his background of being in the theatre meant that he had tremendous expertise that the school was very lucky to have, and he did a lot of research on the music facility, and I think the school owes him a great debt to all of that research, and then for a lot of, you know, what his expertise put into place. and the fact that he knew how to run a theatre.
Yeah.
How fortuitous and how wonderful. So to have a world-class facility that is used outside the school is extraordinary for a school to have that. And I mean, without that, we used to put on musicals in the hall.
Yeah.
And those days were just extraordinary days. And you made do with what you had. Mm. So it's just, I think the school community and the school council and all the advisors and the architects and that they have gathered the best around them and they've made it happen. And you have to enable, it enables the boys. And that's why I mean, I think that the school is there for the boys now.
Now, as far as parental participation goes, parents were traditionally, in nearly all schools, shut out of the organisation and not given the opportunity to share in very much, except presence at a speech day.
Mm.
Certainly in my own day, round about the middle of last century. And in some ways, parental participation can be difficult. How did you find it?
Well, the parents became very involved in the prep school, and that came through the reading program, the literacy program, when it was realised that boys needed a lot more encouragement with their reading, and the school had a policy right through the school of drop everything and read, which Georgie would have talked about. And that, again, not... Do boys think it's manly to read a book? And of course the role models of the ochre image is not sitting down and reading. And of course I think parents not being able to come home and read to their sons, the women did it, and that all the primary school teachers were women because it was a bit like mum. So getting boys to read, getting men to be teaching in primary schools and all that sort of thing, there was now an awareness of all of that. And so that was really important. And parents did come into the school and still do, and the reading program's extremely strong in the prep, and a lot of fathers come. And it's been encouraged and it's been fantastic. So that the men come and stand on the sideline, but so do the mothers.
Yeah.
And now the fathers come and do the reading groups, and so do the mothers. But so that's what I mean, more like a family, more normal. And it's wonderful to see that. And I think the parental involvement is colossal, certainly in the prep school, everything. Parents always are involved. Excursions, sports days, raising money for this, that and the other, whatever it is, the parents are encouraged to be there. And I think it's been fantastic.
And are the parents appreciating the width of opportunity that this generation of school children have?
I would think so. I would think so. We also had morning teas with parents to thank them. Judy Shea, of course, always had, and Pam Wiles had, the library mothers would come. And I think that allowed the parents to be able to talk as well, the mothers to be able to talk. Fathers can talk on the sidelines or whatever, or the old boys. And every year the sixth class parents put on a dinner and they all meet. And then in year 12, the prep boys and prep parents have a dinner, just the prep ones. And they get out all of their photos again and they put them all up. And there are many stories and many thank yous and all of those things. So yes, and once you're in the prep school, the prep boys remain an entity. They've got this strength that stays with them. And I would say, certainly from my son's point of view, his friends are from third class.
Really?
Yes. Mm. Very strong. Mm. Very strong. Others, of course, as well, but it does last. Mm. I think that the bonding and the friendships are wonderful.
Mm.
Yes, I think the parents are integral to sure. As are, what can you say, the old boys who are also integral because they're part of it. And I'm also, my greatest honour is to be an old boy. And I'm an official old boy. And I'm so honoured. I am. And I got this wonderful letter and I'm absolutely overwhelmed to be an old boy. So
you're one of the few teachers who has been through three headmasters. I mean, headmasters are a rare commodity at Shaw because they don't change very often.
Yes, that's right.
What are the major differences? Well, you've talked really about a lot of these major differences, but are there major changes coming up, do you think?
I think inevitably with a new headmaster. Mm. I think that's what it's able, you're enabled to move on.
Mm.
So every headmaster is going to see somewhere where he enables the school to move on more or further or different or develop. And so, yes, I would think so.
Were any of these directions emerging when you retired at the end of last year?
Oh, I think probably, I think, yes, it's hard, isn't it, when you're... Not being in the senior school, because the prep school has doubled in student size and staff size, the prep staff now includes all the infant staff as well.
How does it?
And we have combined staff meetings.
Mm.
So, and we don't necessarily have meetings with the senior school. So the senior school tends to operate in its own entity without the prep school. Mm. And that's a major problem for Common Room.
Mm.
So I will say that that needs to be addressed. And that certainly has started.
Mm.
Because the infant school don't know the staff. The infant staff don't know the senior staff necessarily at all. When do they meet? They can meet once a year on the first day of school before the boys come. And that's when the staff meets. That's it. So that's an interesting one.
Hmm.
Hmm. So, and I think inevitably there will be changes, but probably the immediate change was the facility in the prep school.
Hmm.
And that has had a huge impact on many things, learning to use it, because learning to use the buildings, it takes quite a long time. The boys, takes the boys and the staff, because you think you're somewhere else.
Mm.
It's all new, it's all different.
Yeah.
The places run a different way, everything's changed, everything's a different place, and then you've got new things, and it's the newness. So for someone who's been there for a long time, it's all the newness. So you haven't got a blackboard, you haven't got a whiteboard, you've got a smart board.
Mm.
For the younger generation, that's not new, because that's where they are.
Mm.
So yes, there will be lots of changes. And I can't foresee what they will be, but I know that there will be, yes.
That's one thing we haven't talked about is the impact of technology and the IT. Had that, well, obviously talking about a smart board, what does a smart board do?
Well, a smart board is basically a computer. It's basically hooked up to a computer. But of course, when I was first there, the only person that would ever have their fingers on a typewriter was the secretary. No man would be seen dead doing typing. And so the typists, you know, the secretaries did everybody's work, all their exam papers and all the programs and all this sort of thing. And we used to have to write at the old Roneoed off carbon, whatever they were, Roneo things off. And now, of course, every staff member has a computer on the desk and they do all their own work. And so technology has been a colossal impact and a very big learning curve. And so now, of course, the joke is if you want to know anything about computers, you ask third class. You know, now the staff are asking the students. Well, that's, I'm just saying, you know, for people that haven't learned that particular thing. But of course, for the staff to take that on, if you are at the end of your career and computers have just come in, it is enormous unless you have done it.
Huge.
And then someone will say, I mean, someone of my mother's generation will say, oh, I can type. So that's the least skill you need.
Yeah.
The least. You know. So that and it's taken enormous time. And of course, not only just ordinary technology, but music technology. And
well,
the senior school has taken all that on, and I was able to do some of that, and I actually, in the last 5 years, got computer programs that I was able to use using music technology, and I was able to use the computer rooms in the senior school. And that was wonderful because now it was sight and sound together. And that was that fantastic. You could play something on a keyboard, on a computer, as if you were playing a piano or whatever, and hear it straight away, and remember, and then play back, and all these things. So an enormous amount of change with technology to enable more students to readily access music.
And it brings music into the ambience of the world that they're starting to understand, which it can be a good thing and a bad thing,
yes,
but possibly does make it more acceptable?
More relevant, yes, I think so. Because in the past, if you were learning music, you learnt classical music.
Yes.
Because
in a
order to get
room it, by yourself.
That's right. Mm-hmm. In order to learn an instrument, you really had to go through the classical system, if you like. Mm-hmm. If you were a boarder and you had a guitar, you might do country and western. Now, you see, classical musicians don't necessarily know much about that at all. So I think it enables students, technology enables them much more, and they feel that it's part of them. It's their world, and I think that's wonderful.
And it's a parallel mainstream world.
That's right, that's right.
Which is probably one of something very important when peer opinion and peer pressure is so important.
Yes. Yes, and acceptability for those students who want to do it. And now everybody does everything and everybody has a go. And isn't that wonderful? I just think it's fantastic.
I suppose it's difficult for you if you weren't completely involved with the senior school to judge whether this opening up of opportunities has affected teenage behaviour at all? Does the fact of allowing people to develop in their, shall we say, hidden directions help them adjust through this period? Or is behaviour on the whole much the same as it always has been in the late teens?
I think when the school went to a 17-house system, and that was a system of from year 7 to a house consisting of 75 boys, I believe, from year 7 to year 12, that has made a big difference to, yes, probably the overall, if behaviour to use that word. Whereas I think year 9 and 10 always posed a bit of a problem en masse. So yes, I think the school has taken advice, and if they felt that there was something that could be done differently, done better, and I think that the school has enabled itself by being able to take on these different things and seeing that there was a need and then doing something about it. So, you know, the boys need to have better marks in their English. Good. Do something about it. What are we going to do about it? Drop everything and read? Everybody does it, including the staff. So role modelling as well as... So interesting. And yes, I believe so.
Well, you've certainly seen a very interesting period.
Yes, indeed.
Haven't you?
I have indeed, yes.
And have you worked out what you're going to do in your retirement?
The first thing is not to retire. No, I haven't. I'm keeping very open, open-minded, and the last thing I'll be doing is retiring, of course. So there's much to do and many different things to do, and I'm just waiting to see what happens.
Is there any link with Shaw that you feel you can contribute to?
Oh, I don't know. I think once you've left, I think it's nice to leave and not to just so that you've done your bit, you've done your time, you've progressed through, and it's time for new people to do new things, and I think that's lovely. I think that's really important. I'm going to the card day, so I'm going to go and see all these wonderful mothers that I normally you haven't got a time to speak to, and many who are friends, and so from that point of view, I'm looking forward to that immensely. And I go and see the prep musical, and I'll go to the carol service and all those lovely things, go to their performances, which I always love doing, and they're so kind and they invite me to go. So I think it's not what I can contribute to Shaw, but what it contributes to me all the time.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Jenny.